My guest today is Professor Jacob Kainde Olupono. He is the Professor of African Religious Traditions at the Harvard Divinity School and the Professor of African American Studies in the Faculty of Arts and Sciences at Harvard University. And he also happens to be my dad. So this conversation is a bit of a departure for typical In Conversations episodes. I was inspired to talk to him by the conversation around Beyonce's video and the tremendous amount that I was reading about Yoruba religion online. Some of it true, some of it seemed bonkers. And I thought, let me just talk to this man in my life who knows more about Yoruba religion than anybody I know. And this is our conversation. Beyonce released this video or released her visual album, and a section of it really captured the popular imagination. And you started reading a lot about Yoruba cultural traditions in the popular media. And so I wanted to talk to you and just explore some of the themes in the video, but also just explore, as you understand it, traditional Yoruba practices, religion, what it's come to mean in America, the ways in which it continues to grow, the challenges that it's facing, but have a conversation about it in a really accessible way so that people who maybe don't know anything about Yoruba religion can have a little bit more of an understanding about it, because I felt like I was reading a lot of stuff and, you know, sort of learned a little bit something about it in the process. So had you heard of Beyonce before, Daddy?
Oh, yes. Listening to, you know, her music
and her performances. Her music?
I think so before. Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I just read through. It's not that I pay any serious attention to her. You know what my interests are. So
exactly.
I'm always happy to, you know, listen to black artists.
So have you seen this video that we're talking about? Did you get a chance to watch it?
Yes. I watched it. You know, someone sent it to me to, you know, view it, and I did. I think these other folks are also interested in some of these motifs that are taken from Yoruba culture and religion. Yes.
I think the scene that really sparked, like, a lot of the conversation, right, and sort of brought up specific deities, which we'll get to, is a scene where she comes out of this, you know, giant doors. There's water gushing out at her feet. She's wearing this beautiful yellow dress and sort of eventually embarks on this, you know, mischievous, destructive, yet, you know, empowering mission where she smashes all of these cars with, like, a baseball bat. But going back to the very beginning, you know, there's sort of been suggestions that she's embodying Oshun as she comes out in the yellow dress. Who is Oshun? Who is she?
Yeah, Oshun is a goddess. Is one of the deities in Yoruba religious traditions. Generally, Yoruba scholar would talk about 201 gods or 401 gods,
okay,
in the pantheon. So Oshun is one of these deities, but a very, very important and central one for many, many reasons, which we can, you know, talk about. So Oshun is also the patron goddess of Oshobo, a city in southwestern part of Nigeria. She is seen as a warrior goddess. She is connected with the river called Oshun River, a river that flows through Oshobo and some other towns and cities in Yoruba land. She is propitiated annually during the Oshun-Oshobo festival, a very, very important festival that draws a lot of people to Nigeria, people from Brazil, from Cuba, from all over the world. They visit Nigeria to participate in Oshun Festival.
So I think maybe we need to actually back up one step, which is, if you had to sort of explain the Yoruba religious tradition or sort of give people a sense of how does it operate in people's lives who are practitioners,
How would you describe it?
Yeah, well, that's a big question. We're referring to an indigenous religious tradition called Yoruba indigenous tradition, quite different from, say, the missionary religion, which was Islam, and of course, and Christianity. That is, those were the traditions that came from outside. That's why I use the word missionary there. But Yoruba religious tradition will refer to the indigenous, autochthonous traditions of the people, the religion that was there before these new traditions, Islam and Christianity, came on board. It's a religious worldview, primarily, that defines the cosmology, their worldview. And within this, you have, of course, references to many things, to the pantheon of deities that, you know, I referred to earlier on, 401 or 201, depending on where you stand in Yoruba territory. Quite often, those from the eastern part of Yoruba will call it 201. Those from the central may call it 401 deities, but it doesn't really matter. It simply refers to the fact that there are multiple deities, and this extra one there could mean a reference to the sacred king that is also regarded as a god in Yoruba tradition. Or it could also refer to the fact that Yoruba pantheon keeps expanding regularly. So the possibility of adding the extra one is referred to in that context.
When again, you say the extra one, about, what do you mean?
Well, it means that you see, the ability to expand his pantheon and to incorporate into his system deities that are coming from other traditions, that through his, you know, Yoruba encounter with the outside world, Yoruba encounter with other ethnic groups, Yoruba encounter with, you know, many cultures outside his own, it has this possibility of adapting, you know, extra deities, expanding that. And there's also the possibility of, you know, in the mythic history of humans who have lived very well, who have performed significant feats, being deified in the near future, and then being added to this pantheon. So that is the reference to that. The reference to that. But I think generally, my position is that in addition to this pantheon of deities, Yoruba religion will also mean the ritual practices, sacrifices, the taboos, the totem, and, you know, the symbols that, of course, the symbols that we could see as part of this religious tradition, like another tradition. You also have within it a very, very important divination system called Ifa, I-F-A.
Okay.
Ifa divination, also referred to as Onumila. Onumila is the deity of divination. It's a very, very complex, you know, divination system that is oral, but gradually, as scholars, we're writing down these oral texts, and we're doing a lot of research based on, you know, on the text, the textual traditions that are coming from this oral poetic tradition that is shared among the diviners called the Babalawos, who were like the religious elite in the traditional Yoruba society. In principle, there are 265 chapters of Ifa, and each chapter may run into hundreds of, you know, of verses that are memorized by the diviners and recited in the context of ordering divination process. The rituals and sacrifices are important to Yoruba religion because Yoruba tradition is anchored on practice rather than, you know, on belief. In terms of beliefs, we talk about, you know, the existence of gods and deities and spirits and so on and so forth, but it is in the practice of the tradition that you really understand what the religion is all about. For example, we mentioned Oshun that you just talked about. Oshun is a goddess. It's the goddess of a river. You also have other deities like Oya. You also have Oluwari and so many deities that are regarded as female. In terms of the male gods, you of course have the primary principal ones like Ogun, god of war and iron. You have Obatala, who is supposed to be the most senior of the deities. Obatala we could call god of purity, whose symbols is, you know, whiteness. So you find the devotees of Obatala wearing white.
Right. A lot of people, sometimes you meet people in New York who are saying they're getting indoctrinated into Yoruba religion, and a lot of times they're wearing white. What is the significance? Is everybody getting inducted into Yoruba religion has to wear white, or is it just if your main deity is Obatala?
No, we need to correct that. White clothes or white cloth is the primary color, you know, that most devotees of Orishas will wear. Not just the Obatala, you also find, you know, priests of other deities wearing white. However, there are certain deities, such as Oshun, that do have specific colors, either in addition to white or other than white. Oshun is a golden color. That's what Bianca wore.
Bianca?
What Bianca wore, as opposed to, and the devotees of Shango, god of thunder and lightning, will wear red. You know, find red color. But blue, red, white, are regarded as primary colors in Yoruba tradition. But Oshun, in particular, wears the golden color.
So tell us a little bit about Oshun. You mentioned that she's one of the first, she's one of the primary deities. She's the only female of the first set of gods. Who were that first set, and what is really her significance? Why is she important in the sort of pantheon of other gods?
Well, Oshun was, according to tradition, the only female among these primary deities, about 16 of them, that were sent by God to create the world. And when they, you know, descended into the abyss, just like the story in the book of Genesis, and the work of creation began, somehow, because, you know, she happens to be a woman, there was, you know, this gender discrimination somehow. So the male gods did not involve her in their work, in their activities. But being a very, very powerful woman, innately powerful, she used that power to disturb the activities of the male gods. So the work of creation was not properly done. They couldn't complete it. There were problems. And so they came back to God, Olodumare, to say, look, come and help us. We are not able to complete this work. Olodumare looked around and said, where is the Oshun who was with you? And then they looked at it, you know, disparagingly, and said, you're a woman. She's, you know, and Olodumare smiled and asked them to go back to, you know, consult with her, because he knew that Oshun was the one who was fighting back. We could call that a kind of a protest. So they had no choice. They had to return to the world, and then went and paid obeisance to her and had a pact with her that they would not hide things from her. They would involve her in the work of creation. And as a result of this submissiveness, they were able to get the work done. So that myth is very important in the life of the Yoruba, in the Yoruba culture. So this is one of the reasons why you find that quite a number of scholars, particularly African-American scholars of literature, have cited this case as a very important, you know, myth in understanding gender relations, in understanding the role of women, in understanding how Yoruba society functions. So that was that's one myth about Oshun, that relates to the entire Yoruba cosmology and the creation of the Yoruba world and Yoruba religion. It is also the case that as we look at the myth of origin and the myth surrounding Osun, Osun was a warrior. Osun fought many battles for his people. We have it said that when the history of Yoruba people, when the Muslim jihadists were trying to enter Oshobo, it was Osun who cleverly poisoned them by giving them a kind of a vegetable, a poisoned vegetable called Efo Onyani. And when these jihadists ate it, they had diarrhea and they died and they could not take the city. Mm. So Osun was a warrior. In fact, there is a song in Osun festival that refers to this particular mythic event that says, for Nyari Lomi Fiyinshi Shegun, it is this vegetable called Nyari that the river, that is Osun River, uses to conquer enemies or her enemies or the enemies of her people. But I was also talking about Osun Festival, and there's a particular song that talks about very interesting phenomena, comparing traditional ways of healing with the modern ways of healing, with the introduction of Western medicine. The songs say, before Western doctors came, it was this cool water that Osun used to heal her children. That is, the children that were brought to her. She used the cool water, nothing more than that, to heal them. In other words, it's a recognition that before Western medicine came, Africans, Yorubas had a form of medicine. They had a form of a healing practice that was successful, that was effective. So why is it that when Western medicine came, we decided to throw away everything without, you know, paying attention to what was efficacious in the past and sort of use that to enhance the new knowledge that we just got? You know, as a scholar, I find this very interesting, because I believe that the problem we have, the primary problem we have in Africa, in Nigeria, among Yoruba people, is that we don't value what we have. We don't value what we have. We have not paid enough attention to traditional medicine and what traditional medicine can do to help us, you know, deal with some of the problems and the crisis that we are faced with. The song says, Agbara Agbo Losun Fi Wo Ma Re Ki Dokita
Otode. I remember that.
You've heard that, yes. The torrential, it's talking about the torrential water. And when you say the Agbo, that means the herbal, the concussion. You know, that was what Osun used to use. To use to heal her, you know, her children or the children before Western medicine came. Very interesting, insightful thing. You know, some of these songs are just rang there without people paying attention to their meaning and their significance.
So how do practitioners figure out which deity they're going to sort of be connected with? Like how do you decide? Like, I feel like I'm going to be committed to Osun, or is that assigned to you in some way?
Well, this is an interesting question, sir. You see, in the olden days when Yoruba religion was popularly practiced, when the child is born, the child will be taken to the diviner. And the diviner will perform, you know, Ifa divination or any other form of divination, and will determine the particular deity that the child will propitiate. Now, if the child is born into, of course, most of them, are born into the families of devotees of a particular Orisha, it is assumed that the Orisha of the lineage will also be Isohau Orisha. But in addition to that, through divination, he or she may be asked to propitiate another deity that is not a family or lineage deity. So you find occasions when individuals will be propitiating close to 2-3 deities, depending on the circumstances and the situation. But of course, Islam and Christianity came. People converted to these two traditions, propitiation of gods and the deities were kind of neglected or left out. Now, this is why what you said earlier on is fascinating. That some of these traditions, some of these beliefs, and some of these practices are now seen in the New World, in the Americas. In your New York there, you find quite a number of white African Americans who are devotees of Orisha. And they belong to different houses called Ile. And, you know, people join this Ile, and through divination, they determine the kinds of deities they're going to be propitiating or worshiping. And then they perform the specific initiation rituals that are connected to the Ile, to the deity, and then they live their lives. So these are the people you are seeing, you know, in the cities who are either wearing white. At times they may have to wear white dresses for a whole year. You find some of these practices also in places like Brazil, in Cuba, in Trinidad, in Tobago, you know, likely in America. Yoruba religion, also the basis of traditions like Santeria, you find among the Cubans. Cuban American, or Lukumi, they call it in some of these other places, or the Candomblé in Brazil. And then I must also mention to you that this tradition has gone, you know, traveled to Europe. Even Japan, you find devotees of Orisha tradition there. Several years ago, we had a successful conference in Miami that brought together scholars and devotees of these different traditions from different parts of the world.
When you had said earlier that the 265 chapters, right, of Ifa, which it's an oral tradition, you have Yoruba religion spread globally. How is it, is there any, you know, you think about Christianity, you have a singular text. You think about Islam, you have a singular text, you know, other texts as well, but there really isn't one definitive text. When you have a religious tradition that doesn't have a text, you have practitioners who are spread globally. You have some are continuing the tradition from the slavery period. Is there a center? Is there a way to make sure that these practices are authentic and it's just not just people making up what they want to make up? Like, how do you make? Is there any? But how do you ensure authenticity when the religion and the faith is in so many different contexts globally?
As a scholar of religion, I will say to you that The issue of authenticity is quite, it's important, I understand, but it's a very, very complex one. If you apply that same question to Islam and Christianity, then you know what I'm talking about.
That's true.
You know,
That's true.
Which one is authentic? With that illustration, let me explain to you what is happening in the Yoruba tradition. Yoruba religion has taken roots in many places. In fact, in places like Brazil and Cuba, and they will be simply just refer to it as Orisha. They may not call it Yoruba because Yoruba, you know, specifically refer to the people who are in West Africa. You find the Yorubas in Nigeria, you find them in Togo, you find them in Benin. So they talk about the Orisha tradition. It's a lived religion, it's a praxis that is important. Now, but historically, as Yoruba tradition moves from its place of origin in Nigeria, beginning from Ile-Ife, Oyo, and the whole region, to the different parts of the world, it takes the tone and the identity, the legal identity, the tone of different regions and different places where the religion reached. You find, of course, varieties that are dictated and constructed by the kinds of environment, you know, they find themselves. But however, in spite of this, there are certain basic things you're going to see in any tradition, in any Orisha tradition, wherever you find That is what is authentic to the people. I have been in places in New York and America where, you know, the Caribbeans will come, the African-American, Yoruba, Orisha devotees will come. You find a group of Nigerians, you know, who are there. They are having a common ceremony called Bembe, and there may be arguments or conversations about different things. I remember also in my, when I was still a student at Boston University, and I, you know, took interest in the folks who were doing Yoruba religion in Boston area in the 70s, and, you know, some of them came to me to find out about a particular problem. There were women who were drumming, who were playing drums. And these women drummers some people were just saying to them, you know, no, women don't play drums in Yoruba land. So, you know, they wanted to kind of, I was also teaching Yoruba language. They wanted me to pronounce them that. And I said to myself, no, I can't. I'm not a devotee of Orisha. Even though as a twin, I also, you know, brag about the fact that I'm a twin. You know, in Yoruba tradition, twins are very important. So I can make claim to Orisha. I can make claim to Yoruba religion, but, you know, I'm a Christian and my father was a priest. Huh? So I had to tell them that, you know what, there is no direct answer to this question. The point, of course, is that one thing that has helped me in my life, in my career, is that because my father was an Anglican priest and he moved from place to place in southwestern Nigeria, I witnessed different forms of Yoruba traditions in many places. I noticed, for example, that when we were in Ibaraki, women were great drummers. You know, they early in the morning like this, they bring out their drums, they are beating it, they are going on the thing, calling their colleagues to come together for either the lineage meeting and so on. You know, and I used to teach them from the top of the hill where the church was. I was very curious. And I would say, it was as if I knew what they were singing or what they were saying. They were saying, it is time for us to meet. It is time for us to meet. You come out, let us. But if you come to, you know, your area, or a Bana area in southwestern Nigeria, of course you find men who are predominantly, you know, drummers. So I had to warn them about thinking that there's a specific way of doing things. But intellectually, the question of orthodoxy has always been a problem in religion, no matter where you go. You know, which religion is considered to be, you know, to be orthodox? Or even in America today, where people talk about the evangelicals and the liberals, you know, that's also an issue. I'm writing a book now, and this is the research I'm doing in Germany, in Berlin here, writing a book on the evangelicals in Nigeria. And wow, it's a lot going on there.
Very, you know, intense.
So, pardon?
I said it's very intense.
These traditions spread to places, and in these different places, it kind of, you know, took different colorings. The environment was also an influence, and the kinds of product that came out of the encounter with the new culture and the society was would differ from place to place. And we shouldn't worry about authenticity. We shouldn't worry about orthodoxy, because that is the nature of religion. What we should worry about, though, is that we now find people who are trying to abuse the tradition or to do things that are not in the interest of the society. Then the other part of it, which is the issue of center. Where is the center of this tradition? Well, I have to show my own bias here. I would regard Ile Ife as the center of Yoruba religion.
Okay, that is where we live.
But that doesn't mean that we don't have other centers.
So, Daddy, one thing I found really interesting about Beyonce's video is that all of a sudden,
yes,
you know, and there are other things. You know, there's this Yoruba artist that's in the piece, that his work is featured. It seemed like for a week everyone was talking about this cultural tradition that within yeah. the Nigerian context is often very much, I don't want to say it's derided, but it's just not necessarily celebrated, right? It's not necessarily yeah. people are very Christian or Muslim. And it doesn't seem yeah. to be, at least there's not, doesn't seem to be very much interest in it. And when there is yeah. interest in it, oftentimes it's like, well, don't even show interest in that stuff, as somehow it's like anti-Christian yeah. or anti-Islam. So what I found interesting yeah. is that this African-American woman, you know, it thousands of miles away, is sort of using, you know, particular motifs, using particular ideas, or it's been suggested, who knows for sure, that she's sort of borrowing from our cultural tradition, and all of a sudden yeah. everyone is excited and everyone is interested yeah. in this stuff.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I guess for you, you know, I really wanted to explore with you a little bit about what you think the future of Yoruba religion is in the roots, in its center, in Nigeria, especially in light of the fact that people, you know, really feel like it cannot live together with Christianity, or it cannot live together with Islam in terms of how they organize their own personal religious systems.
Wow. Let me first of all say to you, power to, you know, and power to those who have found interest in Yoruba religion. The stone which the builders have rejected, to use the biblical phrase, the same has become the cornerstone for others. You probably know that text in the Bible.
Yes, yes, yes.
This is what is going on. This is what is going on. In the Yorubas of Nigeria, have decided to jettison their own religious heritage for Christianity. We should not blame outsiders who have taken it and who have seen sense in it. And, you know, who, of course, can make claim to it because they came from Africa. They may not, maybe not necessarily coming from southwestern Nigeria. I mean, the first thing I said when I saw that film, you know, she's a Yoruba, you know, she's Oshun. I just saw that, you know, she's Oshun, she's a Yoruba, with religion and conversion to Islam and Christianity. They are problematic. Unlike maybe some other traditions where you are not asked not to propitiate any other deity outside your own zone. Islam and Christianity are radically monotheistic. If they follow their texts, if you are a Muslim, you are not encouraged to even believe in the Christian God and vice versa. And this is why there's so much fight all over the world, particularly in my own country, Nigeria, is that because they are radical monotheistic traditions, they do not, strictly speaking, appreciate the other God. Southwestern Nigeria is a little bit different. In fact, I was commenting on, I don't know what is going on with me. I've been, you know, commenting on some of these blogs lately. Maybe because I'm more relaxed now here in Bali, I've been trying to find time to comment on the blogs. Southwestern Nigeria, the Yoruba Southwest is very unique in the sense that religion crisscross traditions. In most Muslim homes, families, you find Christians and vice versa. Somehow, in this present day and age, this is changing. We now see signs of problems or quarrels between Muslims and Christians in Southwestern Nigeria. Now, what has happened, of course, is that because of this conversion to Islam and Christianity, and don't forget that evangelical form of Christianity came to Nigeria as early as the 19th century. And of course, Islam also, with the traditions of conversion and jihad and so on, which was to purify the faith, was also entrenched in Nigeria. So this history has affected the status of indigenous religion all over the place. And that is why the proposition of the gods is not encouraged. There was something I did a few months ago. There was a film which sponsored on world religions, and they did different case studies all over the place. And I encouraged them to in the to choose for Africa, Oshun. So maybe you saw that film. Oshun was
No,
the,
I didn't.
Oh yeah, it was a kind of a global film that, you know, was done, project which was supported by America and some other foundations. However, the good news is that those in the diaspora are coming back. Those in the diaspora are coming back in large numbers.
So a popular culture here, I would say over the last year or two, there's been a lot of controversy over, and you kind of touched on this issue a little bit already, over cultural appropriation. So in some cases, it's, you know, Black Americans wearing, you know, Ankara fabric, which is not even African, but that's another story. Or people just saying, you know, Black Americans, other people are appropriating our culture and people don't like it. And I put all of this in quotes. So you've sort of talked about this already, but what are just your general thoughts on the idea of culture appropriation? Is Beyonce borrowing elements from this tradition kind of appropriation in a way, and is that problematic?
Yeah. Well, culture is not what you can sort of freeze somewhere and ask people not to participate in it. it's a free gift to the world. And wherever you go, you participate in the culture that is there. It is not something you can lock up. It is not some. It's like smoke, right? That sort of spread to places, and then. So the second less philosophical response is that for the African Americans, the culture also belongs to them. Historically, they came from Africa. So they see it as the religion of their ancestors. It may not be known ancestors, but of their ancestors. So they have a right to participate in it, to use it, to borrow it, to, you know. Let me tell you, this will interest you. Several years ago, I was in Ife, and you know, I spent a lot of time doing research, collecting materials, and I got a call from America from someone who said he read about me. I was having problems with the, you know, I would like to come to consult with a diviner in the Ife. So I said, right down there, I was interviewing my own diviner relating to my research at that time. And I said, if you want to travel, I was surprised I wanted to travel to Nigeria. She was very desperate. I said, why don't you come? So she came, and then I put her in touch with the diviner, and they went and, you know, had their own private session. And what was very interesting to me was that she now came out of this to tell us that everything the diviner said was true. So she believes in the system. She will do the sacrifices that she was asked to do. By the way, when I function in this context, I don't function as a practitioner. I don't practice Yoruba religion. I'm a Christian, right? But as a scholar and a public intellectual, I also believe that I should be very open about it, and I should render help to people who, you know, who need it. Because I understand the system. I understand the system very well. I studied it. I knew it. I think he wrote to me a year later. I said, thank you very much for being, you know, helpful. You know, I am now, you know, solving this problem. The children are doing well. I did what exactly the diviner asked me to do. This is not an isolated case, Bisayo. As a scholar, I go through this regularly. If I tell you, in the last 6 months, I've received close to 3 letters from different people wanting to, you know, generally when they see my work, they think I am a practitioner.
Right.
I would generally, you know, refer them in America to our leader and our father, who was a professor in Nigeria, Professor Wanda Bimbola, who is a diviner himself. Or I may refer them to his son, Dr. Kola Abimbola, who is now in Washington. Depending on where they are, in different places, I'll link them up with the people who may be of help to them. Whether those in performing arts or whatever, they are always looking for sources of information.
Yeah, of course.
And they, and if they are black, the African Americans, they're also looking for authentic sources that will make a difference in their work. And so, and don't forget, they read about this thing, they understand it, they read about it, and they want it to be. One of the things I saw in that movie, not the Adire, the kinds of Adire you make, was the Ankara.
Ankara,
and then
yeah.
He wore, Yavanti wore Ankara and said, wow, well yeah. Soon, well soon. In fact, I thought you were probably the one that did it for her. I didn't know. But I thought, sorry.
Thank you, Daddy.
Yeah, I was just, I said, is this Busayo Sankara? I wasn't too sure. Yeah. So in summary, let me just say, we can't stop it. Two, they are qualified to do it. They also own it because they are Africans, right? It's owned by all of us. And if they are smart enough to know how best to use it, you know, they are entrepreneurs, so to say. And now that I am teaching a course called Entrepreneurship in Africa, I know what you're talking about. And so I will say to them, you know, power to them. There's nothing wrong in what they do.
You were a twin. What is the significance of twins in the Yoruba tradition? Are they considered deities? Are they... there's the reason I bring that up also in the video. There are these two Cuban singers who are in the video, who are they're performers. They're known as Ibeyi. They're twins, and they perform they pronounce it Ibeyi, right? Because I don't know if it's the Cuban pronunciation.
So, is it Cuban? Pronunciation. That is it. Yes.
They perform in Spanish, English, and some Yoruba is sprinkled in to their work, and they're actually in the video also. So I wanted to ask you about just the significance of twins in the Yoruba tradition.
Well, twins are, you know, twins are sacred. They're sacred deities in Yoruba tradition. In addition to, say, the sacred king I mentioned, twins are also regarded as, you know, highly sacred. Yoruba believe twins are so powerful that witches have no power over them. They can't do them any harm because they are powerful. It relates to the fact of, you know, Dokupe being born as twins, and it has its own mythic origin. There was a time when Yoruba society twins were regarded as monsters to be killed.
Mm.
And so quite a number of twins were killed. And then from being monsters, twins then became also sacred, and it may relate to some other historical events. Now, the tradition in Yoruba culture is that if you lose one of the twins, the mother or the grandmother, the parents, must make the status of, you know, what they call the Ere-Ibeji, like the status you see in the museums all over the world, and give to the child or put on a family altar as a reminder that the second child is still, you know, is alive. They will be told that their twin brother or twin sister has traveled abroad, but not dead. They say they are not dead. And so this is supposed to be the replica of the twin, the deceased twins. Mm-hmm. And as a result of this, you have lots of this images that were carved by, you know, by carvers. So that's why all over, Yorubas have the highest rate of twins in the world.
Right.
Maybe you know that.
Yes.
Yeah. You know that in my own family, in your grandmother's family, in Okeibo there,
mm-hmm.
there are close to how many twins do they have now? I think they're probably close to either 8 or 10.
Oh, wow.
Virtually all my, you know, well, most of my aunts have other twins, or their children have twins.
Hmm.
So it's a very, very, it's a serious business. So during my own time when I was born, I guess a similar tradition was done.
Hold on, Debbie. So when your twin passed away, they actually did a statue of you that was supposed to represent both of you?
No. The statue will represent the deceased.
The deceased
one.
Twin.
But generally, they may make two. They may make two to the pair. My case was different in the sense that I was raised by a surrogate mother. You know, in addition to my mother. You know the book I published. The biography, the memoir I wrote in honor of my parents. You remember, I dedicated it
to
my other mother.
Yes, I do remember.
So she made it. And I don't know what happened to it. But don't forget, because my parents were missionaries. Terrible missionaries. they discouraged those things. But, you know, she took seriously the tradition. And I remember when I was growing up and I spent time with her, she would make sure that we have twins celebration every week. Every week. She would prepare the food, which was maize and cowpea and coconut, and call the children in the neighborhood to come and celebrate, and they'll be singing the twin songs, and oh my God, and then she'll bring her drummers, because her husband was a big drummer in Okegbo, my mother's hometown. You know, what is very interesting about it is that I run into them regularly. These drummers, they're still, you know, the ones who are alive among them, and anytime they see me in functions, anywhere in Nigeria, oh my God, it's almost a commotion. They will begin to drum and to sing the big song.
Mm.
That happens regularly. Because one time they see me, they remember the old days when I used to participate in that tradition.
So if someone was interested in Yoruba religion and wanting to learn more about it as either an academic interest or as a practitioner, what do you think is like a good introduction text? Like, where should they, since it's an oral tradition, someone wanted to learn more, like, what would you suggest as like an introductory, you know, sort of like, this is what it is, this is what it's about?
Well, it depends on, you know, what the person would like to do with it. If it's just for the academic part of it, then you can read the books. There are lots of books out there.
But who would you recommend?
If it has to do...
Who's good?
Well, all the books are good. There is a book, the classic one, which is the book written by the late Professor Bolagidu Olodumare, God in Yoruba Religion. Many. I just the list is endless that have contributed to the understanding of Yoruba religion.
Well, that's it, Daddy. Thank you so much for this conversation. I really appreciate it. I hope you enjoyed it also.